Leaders are all around us, at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate, they risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, we talk to local leaders who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. In this episode, Austin Meek of Waco Business News and host of KWBU's Downtown Depot. Nan Holmes leads the conversation that was recorded January 9th in the KWBU studio.
Hello, I'm Nan Holmes, and welcome to Central Texas Leadership Series. Today I'm visiting with Austin Meek, a man of many talents, but he is a fellow volunteer host of a program on KWBU called Downtown Depot. That's just a small part of his whole story. Austin, welcome to Central Texas Leadership Series.
Thank you, Nan.
Well, I want to explore a list of topics. Let's first discuss your beginnings. Were you born in Dallas?
I was born in Alexandria, Virginia in 1988. Mm. And my three sisters were all born in Dallas, but there was a short period when my family moved up to Northern Virginia, and that's when I came out. But got back to Texas as quickly as I could and grew up in Dallas.
Talk to me about who were some of the people who influenced you in terms of developing your leadership skills and your entrepreneurial skills.
So the biggest influences for me growing up were church and school. We grew up in the church. So my family and I attended Park City's Presbyterian Church. There was two guys there who really stuck out to me when I think back now. One of whom is a fellow by the name of Brian Besolew, who was an older man who played guitar with me when I would lead worship in fifth and sixth grade middle school youth things.
Huh.
And a guy named Scott Rohrman, who was a volunteer. He had younger kids, but I think he just, you know, really appreciated the middle school age and understood that these are some really malleable kids. I want to get in there and volunteer and help. And so Scott and Mr. Besolew were two people who really sort of laid the path for me of how you can be a quote-unquote cool adult. You know, an adult who's not out of touch with the young people. Mm-hmm. So that those interactions were instrumental for me as an entrepreneur, simply by learning the fact that it doesn't really matter what the person on the other side of the table from you looks like or what they might believe. There are commonalities in between us, despite our age, race, whatever other differences we might have. The other main influence for me was my education. I attended a school called Providence Christian School of Texas. It's an excellent college preparatory school, and just had awesome teachers there. My first grade teacher, Eileen Morse, really put in me a love of learning and a love of reading in particular. So I'm still a voracious reader to this day, and I would say that that is because of the foundation that I had at Providence, where you really learned how to work. You really learned how to study and how to attack issues from different sides.
Well, that's refreshing to think about. I, too, am a voracious reader, and it has saved my life so many times to be able to just to read and to step outside of whatever world you are. I saw Henry Louis Gates' program, Finding Your Roots. He's written the science fantasy books, and he said that he lived within a two-block area, but that reading took him to other worlds.
Wow.
So you attended Texas A&M, and I noticed that you majored in creative writing.
I did.
Did that give your parents any pause?
I've given my parents a lot of pause over the years, Nan. I would not say that decision was the one that gave them the most pause. My parents are liberal arts people, so they weren't totally scared about that as a quote-unquote career path. But no, I had given my parents many opportunities to be questioning of some of my decision making. One big point for me was after I graduated from high school, I knew that I was going to go to Texas A&M, but I wasn't really that fired up about going to school. So I actually took a gap year before I went to college.
Huh.
So when I was 18 in the fall of, this would have been 2007 in September, I moved to Barcelona just all by myself, moved over to Spain, and lived with a Spanish family and started taking Spanish classes. I had studied Spanish in high school, and before studying Spanish, I had studied Latin for a long time, had gone up all through the AP level, and I finished AP Latin by my sophomore year of high school. When I got to the end of high school, I realized how little of my Latin I actually remembered, and this was just 2 years ago. So after having graduated, I realized, hey, I studied Spanish for the last 3 years. If I don't use this, I will lose it. I decided to take some time off before enrolling in Texas A&M, moved to Spain, got to take Spanish classes, drank a lot of Spanish wine, played a lot of volleyball, and as a result, went into A&M and took one Spanish test and got out of 2 years of classes that I would have needed to take at A&M. So it was very beneficial for me educationally, culturally, just living on that other side of the world, particularly living in such a dense urban environment as Barcelona has really helped shape my view of the way that cities work, of the way that communities work. But that was a really instrumental part for me. And then the other part of that gap year, I came back to Dallas for Christmas in September 2007. But then in the spring of 2008, I moved to Switzerland. And I lived at this place called the Libri Fellowship, which is a philosophy and theology study center that is up in the Alps in a little tiny alpine town called Waymo, Switzerland. It's in the French-speaking part of the country. And this place, Libri, is a philosophy and theology study center. It's run by Christians, but you certainly don't need to be a Christian to be there. It's just people who are seeking truth, who like to read and like to study. And that was an important time for me to sort of set aside the things I'd been taught at Providence or at my high school, the Cambridge School of Dallas, and things my parents had always told me, and just sort of start fresh and say, hey, like, this is the beginning of my life as an adult. What things of my past are truly important that I want to hang on to? And what are some things that I haven't interacted with yet that perhaps I would like to interact, you know, engage with and integrate into my life? So those were the two ways that I really sort of started on this path of more non-traditional living that my parents could have gotten a little bit nervous about. But because I had made so many decisions up to the point that I got to A&M and decided to go into creative writing, they weren't too worried about it. When I started A&M, I was a finance major, but I just quickly realized that in all likelihood, I'm probably going to come out and get a job with my friend's dad that I know or someone from my church. So having a designation on a sheet of paper for some major that I'm not even really that interested in, I don't think that that's going to be as beneficial to me as if I can show up with a sheet of paper that says, hey, here is a liberal arts major. But this is someone who obviously got really deep into the curriculum. They have an intense knowledge of creative writing, of communication, and I felt like that would serve me better.
That is just so interesting. Well, let's go from there to you came to Waco. What brought you to Waco?
A woman. As many great stories do, it all started with a girl. So my current wife, she is my first wife, planning on her being my only wife. Her name is Julia Meek, but she graduated from Baylor in 2010. And when she was in college, she lived with one of my sister Rachel. So when I was at A&M, a couple years behind them in school, I was only 1 year behind her in high school, but after I took that gap year, I was 2 years behind in college. So I would come to Waco on weekends, hit on Julia. We always had a great rapport. And it took until after we were outside of the college environment for Julia and I to really get on the same page, because I think in her mind, I was still her friend's little brother at that point. But after I graduated from A&M, I lived in Austin. I was working in Austin on a film with two buddies of mine who were making a movie called Believe Me. Believe Me is this hilarious film. It's directed and written by Will Backe and Michael Allen. And Will is a Baylor grad. But this movie, Believe Me, it's about four fraternity brothers who start a fake Christian charity to embezzle money for tuition. It is a hilarious heist, kind of it's a heist with a lot of heart in it, I would say. But when we were making that film in 2014 in Austin, I invited Julia to come down because she was living in LA at the time. She was a working comic and had a foot in the acting scene. So I just said, hey, you know, we're making this movie. You know a lot of the people we're working with. Why don't you come down and check it out? Of course, when she did decide to come, and I was surprised and relieved, I made myself look a lot more integral to the production than I actually was, sufficiently wooed her and made her think that I really had a handle on things. But that just sort of kickstarted what had always been a really great friendly rapport that Julia and I had had. But, I mean, she went back to L.A. after the weekend, and I stayed in Austin, and neither of us were planning on dating someone halfway across the country, but I called her, and then she called me, And then I called her back, and then she called me back. And then 9 months later, we got married. And then 5 days after we got married, we moved to Waco. We moved to Waco because she'd been to Baylor. And at the time that we were engaged, I'd been planning on going to law school, and Baylor was one of the schools at which I'd been accepted. Mm-hmm. So the whole idea was that I was going to be in law school for 3 years while Julia started this harebrained scheme for Pokios, this mobile ice cream sandwich truck. But by the time we started Pokios in April 2015 and then the fall rolled around, the truck was just successful and too much fun, and I couldn't justify going back to school in large part because of the success of the truck, but also I just didn't get enough financial aid from Baylor to really make it work. And I could have moved to another city to pursue the law school dream, but being in Waco was more important to me than having the JD.
Tell me some more about Pokio's ice cream. I mean, one thing about Waco, you can eat ice cream all year round. It's not like a summertime treat, because look at the crazy weather since January 1st. But just do your elevator speech about Pokio's.
So Pokio's is a great story, and it's actually a much longer story than Julia and me. When Julia and I were in high school in Dallas, and we didn't know each other, although we did live closely, there was a place that opened up right at Mockingbird Lane and 75 Central Expressway in Dallas called Pokio's. It opened up in about 2005, and it was opened by an older couple, Lynn and Kathy Azustowitz, and Julia was their very first employee. So she started working there when she was in high school and maintained a great relationship with the Azustowitzes while they went through their divorce. So I think that because she was there in such an early phase of the company and because she walked through that process with both Lynn and Kathy, they feel a real kinship with Julia. They definitely see our Pokio's as sort of sui generis. Like, we were before Pokio's got bigger. We really are an extension of Pokio's in Dallas. So they had a tremendous trust in Julia. And when I had been planning on going to law school and Julia was trying to cook up something fun for her to do, she pitched Lynn and Kathy on the idea of taking their concept of Pokio's and making it mobile. They had had one store in Dallas for about 10 years. They didn't have any visible plans of expansion. And she just said, hey, you have an awesome product, but not a lot of people know about it. They were not very active on social media. You know, a lot of like the modern ways that we would try to attract customers, or at least that we do, they weren't employing at that time. So she just gave them a great pitch of, hey, I can help expand your brand. I know a lot about social media marketing, and let me take it to another location. And they gave us the go-ahead and very little oversight. So we have the same name as Pokio's in Dallas, and we serve the same product. But outside of that, Lynn and Kathy have been great in giving us all of our own autonomy. So we make our own decisions about hiring, firing, how much do we charge for items, what items are we going to roll out this week.
Well, tell me a little bit about that. What is kind of ice cream is it?
So we use Bluebell ice cream, and we bake fresh cookies every day. We have our location inside the Hilton Hotel, is our primary location. We're open there 7 days a week from 2 p.m. until 11 p.m. We just opened that location in September, just before football season, though. Since April 2015, we have had our truck on which we bake cookies and ice cream. And yeah, it's something that for the first couple of years, either Julia or Austin was up every single morning baking cookies. It actually worked out that when we moved to Waco, we lived at the Praetorian Building at 6th and Franklin.
Yes, I know where that is for
and
sure.
The first floor of that building had a kitchen. So we were able to use that as our commissary for the truck. So it was nice because if it was a Friday night and the truck is parked at Dichotomy and we're running low on cookies, you just take your glass of wine down the elevator and go bake a couple more sheets and then you go take them over to the truck. So living in downtown Waco really was instrumental to the success of our business because it was so local. Our kitchen was close to where we parked, which was close to where we got our ice cream. And it's been such a fun business. The city of Waco in particular, at the beginning, just really accepted us. And I would say that our popularity has sort of trailed off. Like, now we are more established. It's not like in 2015 you show up to Dichotomy and there's 80 people waiting on the truck like it used to be. But we are the incumbent now. You know, we are one of the we are the first dessert mobile vendor in Waco. That's still around, at least. And we are one of the people that folks in Waco think of when there's a wedding coming up or mm-hmm. we need cookies for our office party. And we are so grateful for that mantle, and we'll continue to put out great products at reasonable prices and give our excellent customer service, which is really the backbone of what we do.
Well, I just love that story. I joined KWBU in 1992, and the studios were located at the corner of 8th and Austin.
Okay.
And I do not exaggerate when I say that there was nothing downtown. There was a little sandwich shop and then just nothing there. It never recovered from the 1953 tornado. And if anyone has watched that progression of how it looks today, it's like someone waved a magic wand and changed everything.
It's interesting that you say that, because it's fascinating to walk downtown as someone who didn't grow up here, wasn't here in the 80s or the 90s, and I see scars. I can see, oh, here is an empty parking lot. But I look at this picture from 1945, and there was a three-story building there.
Mm-hmm.
And you just realize that Waco's problems are a lot deeper than people don't want to come downtown, or people are scared, or nobody has enough money to shop at this nice place. But there is a real rich history in Waco. But I think that, conversely, that can hold some people back or create stigmas. But for folks who have not been familiar with those stigmas for a long time, like me, you walk in 2015 and you see a blank slate. You see, hey, yes, here's an empty parking lot, but we could put a flower shop there, or we could set up the farmer's market. So I see a place of endless opportunities.
Absolutely. One thing that I knew then and I know now is that Waco is a place where you can invent things. Austin, Dallas, San Antonio, not so much. But when I joined the station, you could do whatever you wanted to. And it's still that same way. You can create things. There's so many things that are popping up that seem new and innovative because there's that opportunity to do that. The East Waco is developing wonderfully. People can still be entrepreneurial in a very new sense and putting new and exciting things, because we haven't reached that saturation point yet.
I feel like Waco is so similar in my mind to being in high school, where if you show up at high school and you just say, I'm going to start the John Denver Appreciation Club, no one's going to tell you you can't start the John Denver Appreciation Club. You totally can, and maybe you'll get made fun for it. Maybe it'll be an amazing idea, and everybody wants to go listen to Country Roads. But in Waco, there are so many things that haven't been done yet. So there aren't people to say, you can't do that, or you shouldn't do that. So it really is an exciting place for people who are proactive and who have ideas, because you will have the leash to try things in Waco. And if it's successful and the market bears it out, then you can continue.
You are absolutely right. And if you're just joining us, I'm Nan Holmes, host of Central Texas Leadership Series, visiting today with Austin Mink. Let's go now to Downtown Depot, because among other things, I find it a very informative show. So much is happening so fast that I need a tour guide, and I think that you are sort of filling that role. You bring in people to help give tours on the radio. And we certainly need young, inventive people to become excited about what I just kind of generally call the Magnolia effect. It's not just Magnolia, but it's just the whole idea of it. Some of it, I think, are people are just got excited about doing things when Fixer Upper went on the air, and it's really kind of put us on the map. But it's also an opportunity for people to just follow their dreams, try their dreams out. And I'm interested to know your take on the challenges. And also, you've talked a little bit about the successes and how it's growing. But talk a little bit more about some of the challenges that are coming alongside the successes.
Of Magnolia specifically?
No, of the whole just explosion of downtown.
General. Sure. So I think it's helpful, Nan, to sort of categorize people in two groups, and many people self-select here, but you have Old Waco and you have New Waco. And Old Waco are typically people who are older in age, or people who have lived in Waco for a long time who might not be older, but they're reticent to change. They like the fact that they live in a city that doesn't have traffic, that they can pull up to the very front parking spot of their favorite restaurant, and they'll walk in and there's no wait. There is a other contingent, I would consider them new Waco, who are very progressive, who want to see the city change, who are okay with dealing with a little bit of traffic on a Saturday or waiting half an hour and going to the bar and getting a drink while they're waiting for their table. A lot of those people are folks like me who have lived in other cities where this is just the norm. You know, it's going to take me 30 minutes to get through downtown Austin. This is not – I'm not going to be railing on the tourists because of that. That's just a way of life. And so I think that that is something that people need to recognize, is that the view of this old Waco person is just as important as the view of a more progressive person like me. And I think it's important for both of those sides to come to the table. And I do think that in particular, we need someone from the old Waco contingent. And there are people. Don't let me try to paint the idea that there aren't. But it is so important to have people from the old Waco contingent who we can pull over into the new Waco contingent. People who have a rich history in Waco, who have family ties, who have been downtown business owners for years and have seen downtown through its different iterations, who say, I'd love to have a food truck park in front of me. Rather than having a Buick parked there for 6 hours, I can have an ice cream truck that comes and brings 100 people to my storefront. It's my responsibility to get them inside of my store, but at least this other person is activating the street. These are more progressive ideas about building communities and building cities that a lot of old Waco hasn't thought about for a while. Or maybe they just still, even after thinking about, realize, I don't want to live in that kind of city, which is totally fine. But I do think that because of Waco's strategic location right here on I-35, because of the strong growth in our state and the continued explosion of DFW and of Dallas, Austin's moving northward, Dallas is finally starting to expand a little bit south, the city of Waco's changing. And it hurts me to see people in the old Waco contingent poo-pooing growth or mad about Magnolia. Because this is making a city that's better for most people, even if it's not better for you specifically. Maybe your commute from Hewitt is now 4 minutes longer. But really, the rising tide is raising all boats. And I think it's just important for me to remind myself that even though I have a pretty clear vision of the way that I would like to see Waco develop and the way that I think that community can be fostered effectively, that's not always in line with every other person in Waco, and they live in the same city as I do, so I need to find a way to respectfully disagree and hopefully educate so that we can all pull in the same direction.
Well, I personally am for the new Waco because it was sort of like a blight. You know, downtown was not attractive at all. No one went there, and it looked like, a failure. A failure as a county, a failure as a community, and now it has none of that.
Yeah, well, and there has been some backlash to Magnolia from folks in downtown, or, you know, this quote-unquote rise of downtown. But there are people who have still been in downtown. Tito, the barber, has been in downtown for decades. And there has been some backlash to these people. Well, we were here before Chip and Joanna, and they want some sort of credit for that. Like, yes, you were faithful and you were here for a long time, but you weren't drawing 50,000 people a week here. So we have to understand, particularly when talking about Magnolia, they're not some faceless company. These are locals. The people who work at Magnolia are Wacoans. Mm-hmm. These are people who care about their community too. So it really grinds my gears when people rail too hard on Magnolia, because the issue is not Magnolia. The issue is tourists who come in and they're making your wait longer. But Magnolia themselves, and Chip and Joanna in particular, have been such a blessing for the city. They single-handedly have changed the perception. You don't want to go on a plane and have someone talk about David Koresh. You would so much rather talk about how cute Chip and Joanna's new baby is. And they really are responsible for at least the genesis of this interest in Waco nationally. But it's up to all of us, the locals, as well as business owners, who are giving Waco a great name so that when people come and visit the town, they leave and go on TripAdvisor and say, the people who live in Waco are the nicest I have met in the entire country. go on TripAdvisor and read reviews for Waco Tours or any of these other tourism businesses. It is incredible the kind of comments that people are making, not just about the businesses, but about the people who live in Waco. Normal interactions with people at the grocery store, at the restaurant. And it's a sign that, for the most part, Wacoans are excited about having a different perception of their city, and they want to be able to showcase it well.
I'm in that category because I want people to understand that we've got so much to offer. If you want to be inventive, if you want to be entrepreneurial, we've talked about that already, but we have so much to offer to people, and there is that kindness, a caring spirit here. There's Baylor University, there's TSTC, there's MCC. There are lots of young people, and there was a time when people, just young people, left. They didn't stay, or they didn't even come back.
Yeah, I think for a long time, people who lived in Waco didn't have a lot to be proud of.
Mm-hmm.
It was in this is just with people who I interact with. So it would have either been your city had a huge tornado came through, or before then, your city is known for racial violence, or after the tornado, your city is known for David Koresh. And so finally, Chip and Joanna have provided a different talking point. And it's something that people in Waco can be really proud of. And we're starting to see that pride because we have locals who are starting their own small businesses because they want to be a part of this exciting time.
Yes. And one of my personal mantras is I love success stories because they just make you feel good when you hear someone tell about how they have gone from just a little mom and pop organization working out of a food truck, and then they've got a permanent place to serve and they still have their food truck. I think that's a wonderful success story.
Well, we're trying it, and we're trying to make sure that Pokio's is seen as a community development tool. That's the most important thing for us, is fostering closeness between Wacoans, fostering closeness between people who come from outside of Waco and want to interact with our city. We want to make sure that we are being ambassadors for Waco and that we are sharing with everybody who comes to town what a beautiful place this is. And it's beautiful because of the people. It's beautiful because of the environment where we are in the state. And it's beautiful, I think, for me primarily because of the energy. There is a buzzy proactivity here in Waco and a real feeling like that. If you have an idea and you're willing to work hard and you have grit, you can make anything happen. We will provide the rest of the infrastructure for you to take your idea to the next level. But if you're willing to work hard and you're nice to people, yeah, this is a good place for you.
I agree 100%. Oh, Austin, thank you so much for joining me today. With young people like you, I think Waco is just really and truly on that upward track. And I see you as someone who is going to encourage other young people to follow their dreams. If they have a vision, that this is the place to try to carry it out because there's so much opportunity here. I think Waco is going through a huge phase of opportunity.
Well, Nan, thank you so much for the opportunity, and thank you for sharing stories like this. It's really important for people to know that there are leaders in their community who want to see the place grow and grow equitably and grow organically. And so thank you for sharing stories like this on KWBU.
Oh, you're so welcome. Come back anytime.
I will.
This conversation was recorded January 9th in the KWBU studio. This and past episodes are archived on our website at kwbu.org. Look under the Programs tab for Central Texas Leadership Series.